She would stay here for a month or two to cut down on rent. So she could have met your boyfriends. No, she wouldn't come here if I had someone staying with me. There wasn't enough room for one thing, McAdams said. What happened once you found out that Erin had disappeared? Slowly, Corrine turned her eyes from Decker to the kid. I talked to the police, pretty much like I'm talking to you, she sipped coffee. When Erin didn't call me back after a week, I knew something wasn't right. It's all in the report that I gave the first policeman. I know, but I'd like to hear it from you. Not much to hear. She wasn't answering her phone, so I went to her apartment. No one was in. I got the manager to open up. Everything looked okay, messy, but not like a burglary or anything. Her clothes were still in her closet, and her jewelry was still in her dresser drawer. Jewelry was pronounced with three syllables. Decker said, Did you talk to her roommate? Caroline Agassi. Yeah, I talked to her. Once you start talking to her, you can't shut her up. She didn't seem to know a lot about Erin. Did she mention any boyfriends? McAdams asked. Again, her eyes turned from Decker to Tyler. If Erin had a man, I didn't know about it. The only thing Caroline talked about was how she was freaked out. Not a word about my daughter, who was the one missing. She looked down at her lap. I don't have anything to add from the first time, Decker said. So you don't know about boyfriends? I just told you no. What about girlfriends? Ask Caroline. She probably knows more than I do, and she'll love talking to you. Did Erin ever disappear before? For 4 years without contacting me? No, Decker said. I'm not making myself clear. Did she ever go away from here for an extended period of time? I suppose she went away from time to time. She never told me one way or the other. She was 30 when she vanished. Her eyes watered and she looked down. I didn't keep tabs on her. Do you think if she relocated, she would have contacted you? She wiped a tear away. Probably. But you haven't had any contact with her, right? You already asked that, and the answer is still no. Think I would be wasting your time if she had called me? I haven't seen her since she vanished. She was very vehement. Besides, why would she leave without her clothes and jewelry and all her things? Decker said, Sometimes if people are in trouble, they leave without a trace and try to start life over under a new identity. Corrine shrugged. You know she was fired from the college grill for stealing. I didn't know, but it doesn't surprise me. Why not? She had sticky fingers. I took to hiding my purse when she was around. Okay. If she stole something big this time, would she take off without contacting anyone? Maybe. Corrine looked down again. But usually, eventually, even if people take off, they try to contact loved ones. This time, Corrine didn't protest, she said. Detective, if she started over, I have no idea where she is. If she was starting over, where do you think she might have gone? Why are you asking me all these questions like she's alive? Do you believe she's alive? How would I know? It's been years. Her voice had gone up an octave. You didn't answer my question. Why do you think she's alive? Until I know differently, that's what I assume. Where would she have gone if she wanted to start over? For the last time, I don't know. Let me phrase the question another way. Did she ever talk about a town or a place she wanted to visit? When Corrine didn't respond, Decker said, No special place where she wanted to visit or live. Corrine said nothing at first. Then she whispered, California. She wanted to live in California. She talked about it. Did she say what she liked about California? sunshine, the beach, movie stars. What girl wouldn't want to go there? So when you say California, do you mean the city of Los Angeles? She talked about Hollywood. A pause. Is that part of Los Angeles? Yes, it's part of the city. You've been there before, Detective? I have. Did you live there? Yes, I did. Really now? Corrine sat back in her chair. So what are you doing out here in the middle of nowhere? Working for Greenberry PD. Obviously. Why'd you move here? I wanted to live somewhere a little smaller and a little quieter. She turned to McAdams. Where are you from? New York City. I suppose you wanted something smaller and quieter, too. Corrine's eyes went from Decker to McAdams. Are you guys bored? Is that why you're digging up old cases like Aaron's? It has more to do with finding the bodies on Bogat Trail, Decker answered. I'm wondering where your daughter fits in. Corrine nodded. What makes you think she fits in anywhere? She may not. Decker was looking at her eyes. I'm sure we'd both like to know one way or the other. I do miss her. The woman's eyes watered again. So what are you going to do if you don't find Darren's bones? I'm going to look for her, Corrine. I'm going to try to find out what happened to her. Well, good luck with that. Did you ever hire a private detective? Yeah, with all my extra money, Corrine laughed. Then she got serious. I don't mean to appear cold, but she was 30. If she wanted to disappear, I wasn't going to stop her. Do you think she wanted to disappear? I already told you I don't know. She stared at Decker. You don't believe me. I can live with that. Cops usually don't believe me. Corrine, I believe that you're doing the best you can, okay? I'm not here to challenge you, just to get to the truth. That's what I'm paid for. Then go out and find the truth, Mr. Detective. Decker smiled. I'll do my best. No offense, but I think you're crazy to move from L.A. to here. None taken. She looked down. If you think she took off and doesn't want to be found, why are you wasting time looking for her? If she's trying to start a new identity, why stick your nose into it? She's an adult. She can do what she wants. Once I find out that she's alive, I'll back off. But until I know otherwise, it's my job to ask questions. I'm sure you can understand that. She shrugged. Are you done? We are for right now. I know this is difficult, and I appreciate your cooperation. Corrine paused. I'm sorry if I seem rude. I'm a little tired. Change of seasons and all. No problem, Corrine. Decker stood up, and so did McAdams. Thanks for the coffee, and thanks for your time. If you need to ask more questions, you can come back again. I won't tell you anything different. Still, I have plenty of coffee and way too much time. After they left and were in the car, McAdams said, She's lying. I think so. She knows where her daughter is. I hope that's what she's holding back. That means Aaron is alive and well. Do you think she knows where Aaron is? I don't know. It's possible that Aaron made contact with her. If Aaron calls her again, Mom will tell her that we're reopening the case. But it could be that Aaron is dead. Yeah, maybe we're just engaging in wishful thinking because we have three bodies and no clues. Could be. I still know plenty of people in L.A. I'll make contact and see if they can come up with anything. How do they weed out a missing person in a city of millions? They've got a system, but it's not going to happen overnight. If she ran away, there has to be a reason. Maybe she stole money again, Maybe this time she got caught by a boss who wasn't as sympathetic as Diaz. Decker paused. Any police reports in her file? Not that I've come across. We should talk to her former boss at the Circle M. Want to do that now? Decker checked his watch. It was a little after 9. Sure. Give him a call. McAdams picked up his cell. No signal. We'll get one soon. Let's get out of here. They walked in silence to the car. Decker started the engine to let it warm up. McAdams rubbed his hands together. Or perhaps, like Rena said, Aaron escaped the clutches of a serial killer and took off to get a new identity. It's a theory. If it's a serial killer, he doesn't kill that often, McAdams remarked. Once every couple of years. Yeah, I thought of that, Decker said. It could be that the urge gets overwhelming, or it could be he's an opportunist and the situation just presents itself. Like Aaron walking home alone at night. Exactly. The only thing I can say is he has to be associated with Greenbury because all 3 victims were here when they died, and they all died when the colleges were in session. So why do you want to explore the cases individually instead of looking at points of intersection? I keep going back and forth. Decker put the car in drive. What do a 30-year-old cashier, a transgender person who didn't totally make the plunge, a lost girl with a fluid sexual identity, and a party girl have in common? I give up. Tell me. No, you tell me, because I don't know the answer. Decker turned the car around and slowly drove over the dirt pathway. Maybe it's like a common social cause. If it's a common social cause, it lasted through 8 years. Yes, social causes do wax and wane in popularity. Decker finally reached a paved road. But there is always a cadre of professors to take up the mantle even if the cause changes. Hank Carter and his socially conscious investing? Maybe. He stopped the car. I don't like him, but his charisma is interesting. Let's learn about the most popular professors in the 5 colleges. Because where you find a charismatic leader, you find acolytes, devotees who play follow the leader right off the cliff. Chapter 20. Decker said, I'm going to make it decaf if it's okay with you. Sure. Rena was on the couch making a list of what she would need for the upcoming high holy days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Nice of you to stop by during your workday. I rushed out this morning. Thought a 10 o'clock coffee break was in order. I'll set some fruit out for us as well. Be back in a minute. While Decker was in the kitchen, McAdams sat next to Rena on the couch. What holiday are you planning for? The Jewish New Year is in a couple of weeks. That's right. Is your family coming in? No, they usually come up around a month later for the holiday sukkahs, but I'm doing something for Hillel. I'm having a huge buffet for the students who are stuck at the colleges during the holiday. How huge is huge? Around 100 people, more or less, or maybe just more. McAdams smiled. Does the old man know about it? No need to worry him about things that are a little ways off. So that would be a no, she smiled at Tyler. You can keep a secret, right? He made a zipper sign over his lips. Decker walked in with a tray of coffee. Derek Kinney called back. He can meet with us in an hour. Who's Derek Kinney? Rena asked. Aaron Young's boss at the Circle M, McAdams said. Ah, are you making any progress? Nothing to be excited about, Decker said. After talking to the mother, the boss thinks she might be alive, McAdams said. Really? Rena said. Why? We both think Mom is holding back, but that's a gut feeling. Follow your gut. My gut is saying my blood sugar could use a jolt. Decker handed out the coffee cups. Can I sit next to my wife, please? Sure. McAdams scooted down until they were three in a row on the sofa. Decker picked up a piece of apple. Are you busy right now? What do you mean? Rena snapped back. I mean, are you busy right now? What is confusing about the sentence? Decker regarded his wife. What's going on?
Nothing.
Rather than argue the ridiculous point, Decker remained quiet. Rena looked at McAdams, who said, Don't blame me. I've been here the entire time. She turned to Decker. I'm planning an open house buffet for Rosh Hashanah, McAdams said. I, for one, think it's a great and charitable idea. Students could use a home-cooked meal. You're doing a service for every parent who has ever sent a kid to college. Thank you, Tyler, Rena said. Nice of you to check in with me beforehand, Decker said. I was going to tell you tonight. Tell me?
Ask you. If you don't want me to do it, I haven't formally sent out any evites.
And then I look like an ogre.
You are the ogre.
You're pushing it, kiddo. He exhaled. How many people?
Around 50.
That's not so bad.
Maybe more.
I already doubled the amount of people in my head. Decker sipped coffee. It's a nice thing to do, Rena. I'm just not a nice guy. But go ahead and send out the evites. It'll be fine.
This time it was Rena who stared at him with a knitted brow. You want me to do something for you, don't you?
I won't even pretend innocence. I'd like you to talk to some of the Hillel students, find out who the popular professors are.
And?
That's it.
Okay.
You know I deal with students from all five colleges. Do you want me to zero in on Morse McKinley College?
Not necessarily.
I'd like to know the professors who are always at the forefront of social activism. I already interviewed Hank Carter. I didn't like him, but as of right now, I have no reason to suspect him. If you could find out about others, that would be helpful.
You may be talking about two different groups of people, popular teachers and socially active teachers.
I need those who overlap.
And why are you looking at socially responsible popular professors?
I'm really looking for socially responsible popular professors who have a very bad dark side. Rena was taken aback.
You suspect a professor is your serial killer?
I'm looking for someone who has been around for the last 8 years. It could be a townie, but since we have three bodies who were students, I'm thinking it's someone employed by the five colleges.
So it doesn't have to be a professor.
No, Decker said. Who else did you have in mind?
The clergy deals with all five colleges.
Are you insinuating something about Rabbi Melanie?
Rena laughed. Just saying. And I'm sure you know that there are alternative clubs that traverse all five colleges.
I don't know. Tell me.
Well, without thinking about it, I've heard of a tattoo club, a piercing club, a liar's club for both guys and gals, a B&D club a la 50 Shades of Grey, McAdams said. How do you know all this?
I hang around students all the time.
And they just walk up to you and say, Hey, Mrs. Decker, did you hear about the 50 Shades of Grey club?
The gossip happens when we're doing stuff like baking challah or packing weekend meals for the poor. When there are crowds of kids working in a small room, I overhear them talking. Most of the gossip is second or third hand, but that doesn't mean it isn't accurate.
Decker said,
Just see what you can find out, okay? I'll do the same.
Do I get paid for this?
Decker smiled.
You get paid by me being in a good mood.
When Rena rolled her eyes, he said, I'll make it up to you, I promise.
McAdams said,
There isn't by any chance a serial killer club.
Not that I know of, but who knows what lurks in the shadows. She turned to her husband. In return for my intel, I want you to do something for me.
I've already said it's okay to host Rosh Hashanah here. That's quid pro quo.
I have something else in mind. Rena made a face.
You want to also host a break-the-fast meal after Yom Kippur?
No, but that would be a very nice thing to do as well.
Okay, what?
I wanted to host a Sukkot party during the week.
But if you can only tolerate one more social event, I think a break-the-fast buffet would be better. Hillel will give me a stipend for the food, by the way.
You know, old man, parties are a good way to hear student gossip, McAdams said.
Rena gave Tyler a thumbs up. You two are always conspiring against me.
Decker laughed.
Do whatever you want, Rena. Actually, I like the big parties better than the small ones. When it's big, the kids speak to one another, and I don't feel the need to make small talk.
He turned to McAdams. You can come down if you want. This year most of the holidays are over the weekend. Being a student yourself, you'd fit in nicely. You can be my mole.
I thought I was your mole, Rena said.
A good detective has more than one source of info.
As long as I'm your main mole. Anyway, Tyler probably won't make it out on Yom Kippur this year. It's on a Monday, and there's no reason to miss school.
It's not a problem, Rena, McAdams said. As shocked as you may be by hearing this, the law school usually empties out on Yom Kippur, because who the hell has ever heard of a Jewish lawyer?
The Circle M was interchangeable with any of the hundreds of 24-hour convenience stores across the nation. The cashier sat in a lozenge-shaped area that contained a register, a locked glass cabinet of razor blades and batteries, a popcorn machine, a hot dog roller coaster, a microwave, a glass shelf of donuts and pastries, three coffee thermoses, a napkin holder, paper cups with lids, plastic utensils, coffee accoutrements, and condiment dispensers of ketchup, mustard, and relish. The icy section, cherry, blue raspberry, and lemonade, was self-serve just outside the contained area. There were shelves holding jars, cans, and bags, a refrigerated area for beer, soft drinks, orange juice, and milk, and a small separate freezer unit that held ice cream and popsicles. Derek Kinney manned his post behind the register. He was in his late 60s, a doughy, bald man with thick arms and stumpy legs. He had brown eyes, a ruddy complexion, and a bulbous-veined nose from too much imbibing. He wiped down the countertop as he spoke to Decker and McAdams.
I knew what Erin had done before I hired her.
How?
Decker asked.
It's a small town. Word gets around. I never asked her about it. I guess I was waiting for her to tell me. But she didn't, so I watched her. Far as I could tell, she wasn't stealing. I checked the receipts. Everything squared with the register.
You took an awfully big risk.
She was desperate. I believe that everyone deserves a second chance.
That's nice of you.
Turns out I was right. She was a hard worker.
Kinney shrugged and put the dish rag under the counter.
I was real sorry when she went missing.
Tell me how you found out.
She didn't show up at work, and she didn't answer her phone. That was unusual. She was dependable for the most part.
Did you go over to her apartment?
I did. Knocked on the door and no answer. I just thought she had enough.
Enough of what? McAdams asked.
The town. She used to tell whoever would listen that she had dreams of better things.
What were her dreams? Decker asked.
She wanted to go to beauty school in Hollywood and work with the stars.
A small smile.
Problem was, she didn't have money.
And she wasn't saving much, judging by how often I saw her at the local hangouts. She was kind of what we used to call a barfly in movies.
She was older than most of the college students, Decker pointed out.
Not that much older. And you know college boys. They'll screw anything that isn't nailed down.
She hung out with college students, McAdams said.
Students, teachers, locals, anyone who'd buy her a beer and wanted a good time. She used to talk to me about it. I used to tell her if she really wanted to get away, she shouldn't be spending her cash drinking and getting tattoos.
And what did she say to that? Decker asked. He smiled.
You know, Derek, a girl's gotta have a little fun now and then. We'd run into each other sometimes, me and my wife. By the end of the evening, Erin was usually wobbly on her feet. We took her home several times, as a matter of fact.
So she'd drive home drunk?
She didn't have a car. She had a bike. The few times we took her home, we put her and her bike in the bed of our truck.
Can we go back to the night that Erin disappeared?
If you want. Don't have much to tell.
Damn, excuse me. A male transient with unwashed hair and dirty clothes had wandered into the store. Decker knew most of the small homeless population. There was a shelter, but when the weather was decent, most of them preferred the streets. Kinney said,
"What do you need, Jackson?"
"Just looking, Mr. Kinney."
He looked at Decker with hooded eyes. "Hey, Jackson, what's up?" Decker said.
"Don't suppose you could spare some change, Mr. Officer?"
McAdams started to reach in his pocket, but then Kinney shook his head.
"It's warm outside, J.J. Move it."
"You got anything from me, Mr. Kinney?"
Kinney kept his eyes glued to the man's hands. He slipped his own underneath the counter and took out a big paper bag and pulled out a seed bagel.
"It's old, but not so bad if you dunk it in coffee. You can have a cup of coffee this time, but don't be expecting it every time."
"No, sir."
Jackson grabbed the bagel and the coffee and went outside to eat his impromptu feast on one of the parking cement blocks. Kinney said, "One second." He rushed outside and pointed Jackson in the direction of the road. The homeless man got up and left. When Derek returned, he said,
"It's the deal I have with these guys. I give them a little food if they don't hang around my store. I'm right off the highway. We get a lot of fall leaf watchers who want a quick cup of coffee and a little something. When they hang around here, it drives the tourists away."
A pause.
"Answer me something," Kinney said.
"Why do they live on the streets if they can get a bed and a decent meal at the shelter in town?"
"They have mental problems. The shelters have rules. They don't like rules, and they especially don't like taking medication. But winter is the great equalizer."
"They'll be out of your hair soon enough," Decker smiled.
"You were going to tell me about the night that Erin Young disappeared.
The day after, she didn't show up for night shift."
"What did you do?"
"Locked up the store, went over to her apartment, and banged on the door. No one answered."
"She lived with a roommate," McAdams said.
"Well, her roommate must have been out. When she didn't show up the next day, I figured she finally left for Hollywood."
"When did you think something was wrong?"
"When she was reported missing about a week later by her mama. The papers said she still had her belongings in her apartment. I thought to myself, that isn't good." He paused. "The police came and talked to me. Then they talked to Lindsay Terrahout, who was the last one to see her before she disappeared. Lindsay didn't suspect anything bad. She said that Erin seemed in good spirits.
The report said she was walking home the night she went missing.
She often walked when the weather was mild. She didn't live more than a half mile from here.
and when the weather was bad. If she couldn't get a ride or she couldn't ride her bike because of the snow, she'd bundle up and walk. Lots of people around here are retirees and don't have cars. It's not unusual to see people walking even in winter. Decker nodded. I was retired when I bought this place, Kinney thought a moment. Might have bit off more than I can chew. Some days when it's real cold, I just don't want to get out of bed. But the store is warm and it keeps me busy even if it's busy work. Fact is, everyone needs a place to go when they wake up in the morning. Back in the car, Decker said, when the police did a search of Aaron's apartment, did anyone make note of a bicycle? I don't remember a bicycle in the file, but I'll check it again. Even if it's there, she couldn't have gotten to L.A. on a bicycle. She could have pedaled far enough to catch a bus or even a train. Taken her bicycle with her? There are racks on buses for bikes. I'll do a little probing. Good. Decker's cell went off and connected immediately to Bluetooth. Radar's voice said, "Where are you?" "Tyler and I just left after interviewing Derek Kinney." "Who the hell is he?" "He owns the Circle M where Aaron Young worked." Radar paused. "Get a hinky feeling about him?" "Not really," Decker said. "What about you, Harvard?" "Seems straightforward." "Why?" Decker asked. "Don't tell me you found another body." "No new bodies. As a matter of fact, we have the opposite. A student who vanished 3 days ago from Morse McKinley. The college just called. The parents are with the administration right now, and they finally figured that maybe someone should call the police. Idiots." "What can you tell me about it?" "Her name is Dana Berenson. She was last seen leaving a party at Morse McKinley at around 11 at night. She said she was going back to her dorm. Her roommate said she never returned. She's not answering her phone. Friends haven't seen her. Her boyfriend hasn't seen her. Get over there and find out what's going on." "On it, Mike," Radar said. "McAdams, when are you leaving?"
"Next week."
"Great. You can go with him."
"Not a problem."
"Tyler, just be sure to write up a summary of your assignments this summer so when I hand them over to replacements, they'll know what's going on."
"Already done."
"Good. Just keep me in the loop." Radar disconnected the line. Decker turned the call to off. "Could you call Lindsay Terra Hout tomorrow? Ask her about Aaron."
"Sure.
I'll also call the loquacious roommate, Caroline Agassi, and see what she has to say." "Great. Have you really written up your summary?"
"Yep. Just have to log it into the computer. I'm nothing if not diligent."
A pause. "Another missing girl?" "Let's not assume anything. Even the obvious?" Decker said. "With this new development, I think I'm going to be tied up for a while."
"I'm here for you, old man. Just let me know what you need."
"I need help. I need your help."
"Wow." McAdams paused. "Did I just hear you right?"
"I said you're getting on my nerves and I'd like to see you gone ASAP. McAdams smiled.
"That's what I thought you said."
Chapter 21. Flipping through several pictures of Dana Berenson, Decker saw a long-haired brunette with brown eyes, a long face, thin lips, and a prominent forehead. In the close-ups, she stared at the camera straight on with a defiant look. When he asked about her height and weight, her mother, Jamie, told him she was 5'4" and tipped the scales at 125 pounds. Mom was also a brown-eyed brunette with short hair. She was dressed in black slacks and a wheat-colored sweater that emphasized her wan complexion. Larry Berenson, Dana's father, was average height. His hair was white and his eyes were blue. He had on a dark suit, white shirt, no tie. He did most of the talking. Explain to me how a girl, a child, really, goes missing for 3 days and no one does a damn thing about it. His remarks were addressed to the president of Morse McKinley, Benedict Velt, a slight man with sunken, pockmarked cheeks and blow-dried hair. You explain to me how the hell this happens. I assure you, we'll get to the bottom of this. I'm not interested in your assurances. I'm interested in finding my daughter. Mr. Berenson, I'd be frantic, too, but I promise you that most of the time these things resolve with positive results. Decker had never dealt with Velt before. The president's voice was calm, but his actions belied him. He kept clasping and unclasping his hands. He turned to Decker and said, "Has that been your experience?" "Most missing persons return after a few days, yes," Decker said. "But we're not going to wait around. I'll need a list of her classes, a list of her friends, and a list of all the students in her dorm. To her mother. Any names you can provide me will be a start."
"I'm drawing blanks."
"Well, think, Jamie," Berenson bellowed. "It's important." "Stop pressuring me." Decker held up a hand. "If you think of something, Mrs. Berenson, let me know. The only person I can think of offhand is her roommate, Allison. She hated her." "Oh," Decker said. "Do you know Allison's last name?"
"I'm blanking again,"
Velt got on the intercom. "Georgia, can you tell me who Dana Berenson's current roommate is?"
"You don't know?"
Dad was once again outraged. The intercom buzzed.
"Allison Park."
"Thank you." Velt turned to Mr. Berenson. "Students switch all the time. I wanted to be sure." "Why didn't she like Allison Park, Mrs. Berenson?" Decker asked.
"I don't know specifics. Just that Dana complained about her. Personality conflict,"
McAdams said. "What about a boyfriend?"
"Mitch. Law or Low."
"Mitchell Law," Velt said. "He's a junior here," Decker said. "Could you get him down here now?" Jamie said.
"I'm not sure if it was serious."
"I'd still like to talk to him." Velt picked up the phone. He asked his assistant to find Law and send him over. Decker turned to Velt. "When was the last time her dorm card was swiped to get into the building?" The president pinkened.
"I'll find out for you."
"Do you have CCTV at the door of the dorm?"
"Certainly, I'll get that for you as well."
"I see you've come prepared," Berenson snarled. "We're all on the same side, Mr. Berenson," Decker said. "Has she done this before, gone away for a few days without telling you?"
"Not 4 days," Jamie answered. "Besides, I can usually reach her by phone or text. My calls are going straight to voicemail, and now her mailbox is full. I'm..."
Her eyes teared up.
"Something's wrong."
"I'd like to get her phone records." Decker turned to Dad. "Do you pay for her phone?"
"Of course."
"Can I have permission to access her phone records if I need to?"
"What do you mean, if you need to?"
Jamie snapped. "It takes a day or two to get the records once I've submitted a request. She may have shown up by then."
"Oh."
Jamie looked away.
"Anything you need," Larry Berenson said. "Just tell me where to sign."
"I'll get you the papers," Decker said. "Does she text or email you as well?" Dad said.
"She mostly corresponds with her mother. She only phones me when she wants money."
"Larry..."
"It's true. Why hide the obvious? According to Dana, we have issues. Her term, not mine. She's difficult, but that doesn't mean I'm not concerned."
"I know you are, Mr. Berenson. Children can be trying, but of course you love them." He turned to Dana's mother. "How often would you say you speak to Dana?"
"Like I said, it isn't daily, but she does text and she does email me when she has something on her mind."
"Like what?" The woman sighed.
"Some injustice,"
Real or imaginary, Dad added.
Larry, please.
Sorry, Larry held up his hand. Sorry. Many college kids find injustices in the world, McAdams said. It's part of the curriculum. How to protest against authority. And I'm not being facetious.
You can say that again, Dad muttered. All this tuition for her to tell me how my views are antiquated and immoral. It seems I haven't had an original thought in my head since she's reached adolescence.
It's part of growing up, Larry. We weren't exactly angels when we were young.
I would never talk to my parents the way she talks to us.
What difference does that make now?
I'm just praying she didn't piss off the wrong person, Jamie.
Excuse me, Decker interrupted. Mrs. Berenson, could you please give me your phone?
Why?
I'd like to copy her texts and emails to you.
If it will help, of course.
With shaking hands, she unlocked her phone and handed it to Decker. Decker scrolled down the list. Is dana.catherine.berenson@gmail.com her email address?
Yes, her personal email. She also has one at school.
dberenson2020@morsemckinley.org?
Yes.
Can I have your permission to access her emails from her various accounts as well?
Don't you need Dana's permission? Larry asked.
Under these circumstances, the service providers are usually cooperative if the parents contact the police and give us permission.
Then of course.
Decker gave McAdams the phone. Detective McAdams is more tech-savvy than I am. To Tyler. Send the correspondence to my phone and to the station house as well.
Okay.
Do you need somewhere quiet to work?
No, I'm fine here, thanks.
As McAdams started scrolling down the phone, Decker said, Mrs. Berenson, I need you to be truthful with me. Does Dana have any bad habits?
I'm sure she's not perfect, but she's never been to rehab, if that's what you're asking.
Jamie was huffy. Tell me about the times she disappeared in the past.
She didn't disappear, Jamie was insistent. She wasn't always diligent about telling me where she went.
Decker nodded and waited.
It was mostly over the weekends, Jamie told him, from Friday night until sometime on Monday. I often wouldn't hear from her. She always laughed, told me, Ma, I'm fine, it's college, leave me alone.
Where do you think she went over the weekends?
I have no idea, and she never told me. But she's never gone off like this without me being able to contact her.
At that moment, President Velt's phone buzzed. He picked up the receiver.
Mitchell Law is here.
Thank you. Do you have a quiet place where Detective McAdams and I can talk to him privately?
Why not talk to him right here? Larry demanded. If there's something funny going on, I want to know about it.
I'll find out more one-on-one, Mr. Berenson. I'll tell you everything I know afterward. Velt spoke into the phone.
Put him in the comptroller's office, Georgia,
Decker said. I'm still going to need that list of her friends and her dormmates, Dr. Velt.
Of course, and I'll get you the CCTV tape as well as her card swipe. Let me tend to Mitchell first, and I'll get what you need while you're talking to him.
Don't tell him what's going on yet, Decker said.
I won't.
Velt turned to the parents.
Feel free to call me. I'm here for you.
Mr. Berenson snorted. Jamie said,
What do we do in the meantime?
If you could give me a list of any of her friends, old or new, that would be a starting point. Decker gave her a piece of paper from his notebook and a pencil. After that, just hang tight. Where did you two travel in from?
The Boston area, Dad said.
Are you staying here overnight?
We're staying here until we get some answers.
I understand. Are you staying at the Inn of the Five Colleges?
Yes.
Then I suggest you go back to the hotel. There's nothing further for you to do right now except make out that list. I promise to give you updates.
and you can call me any time you want. Hopefully this will be resolved positively and very soon." Again, tears leaked from Jamie's eyes.
"That would be nice."
A pause.
"When do I get my phone back?"
"I'll bring it over personally when we're done with it." Decker tapped McAdams's shoulder. The kid had been deep in email concentration. "Mitchell Law is here." McAdams looked up.
"Okay, stay here and do this, or..."
Decker said. "No, come with me." Belt came back in.
"My secretary will show you where he is."
"Thank you." Decker shook hands with the parents. "I'll be in touch." Waiting in the receptionist's office, they stood and watched Georgia speak in hushed tones over the phone. She gave them a 2-minute sign with her fingers.
"Anything?" Decker whispered to McAdams.
"Mom's last communication with her daughter was a text the day before she allegedly went missing. It said..." "Ah, here it is. Can't come this weekend, Mom. Other plans."
He looked up.
"Is the other plans sitting in the comptroller's office?"
"Who knows? I'm sure he'll make a point of telling us it wasn't serious. That's usually what they do when a girlfriend is missing."
"Let me take the lead on this one, boss. It's to your advantage to have a young guy go toe-to-toe with Mr. Boyfriend."
"Sure, go ahead. I'll feel free to jump in as needed."
"A jump is acceptable. Just don't pole vault over me. I do have an ego, but then again, don't we all?"
Chapter 22. In college surveys, Morse McKinley always places within the top 3 spots for the best-looking undergraduate guys, and Mitchell Law was probably one of the reasons for the 5-star rating. He was tall, well-built, with regular features, thick dark hair, and eyebrows arching over probing blue eyes. He wore a brown cable-knit sweater over a blue and white plaid sports shirt and faded jeans. His knapsack rested at the side of his chair. He looked up from his phone when Decker and McAdams came in, but quickly returned his attention back to his cell. Without asking, McAdams took it from his hands and placed it in his pocket.
"Hey!"
Law frowned.
"You can't do that."
"I just did." McAdams pulled up a chair and sat opposite, so close that their knees almost touched.
"I'll give it back. I just want your undivided attention for a few minutes. We're the police, by the way. The city police, not the school police."
"If you call this a city..."
"Yeah, we are pretty non-essential, except once in a blue moon. Today the moon is azure, my friend. A girl is missing. Your girlfriend, to be exact."
Law took his time before speaking.
"I need to correct a couple of misconceptions."
"Please."
"One, I don't know anything about a missing girl. And 2, I don't have a girlfriend. I have steady hookups, as in plural. Who are you referring to?"
"Dana Berenson." Mitchell's face became a question mark.
"She's missing?"
"No one has seen or heard from her in way too many days."
"Since, like..."
"When was the last time you saw her?" When Law glanced at Decker, McAdams said,
"Don't look at him, Mitch, look at me. Tell me what's going on."
"I don't know what's going on."
"When was the last time you saw Dana Berenson?"
"I think it was at a party."
"When was the party?"
"Last Thursday night."
"Where?"
"Morse McKinley."
"Please don't make me pull teeth. Where at Morse McKinley?"
"Beecher Hall, 3rd floor common room. It was the usual Thursday night thing. I didn't even come with her."
"Who'd you come with?"
"I didn't bring a girl."
"Why limit your options?"
"So you went stag."
"I knew just about everyone there. After a few years here, that's not unusual. It's a small college."
"I'm going to need names, Mitch."
"Of who saw me there?"
"Yes.
How many do you want?"
"I'll take as many as you want to give me."
"Sure.
Can I have my phone back?"
"Eventually."
"Did you talk to Dana at the party?"
Yeah, sure, of course. What did you talk about?
Nothing much.
What constitutes nothing much?
When law wasn't forthcoming, McAdams said, Mitch, if you're honest, it'll go a long way.
He shrugged. As the party started winding down, we were both a little hammered. I asked her if she wanted to come back to my dorm and continue the party there.
And she said...
She said no.
He looked down.
I was surprised, actually. She rarely said no to me.
So then what did you do?
What do you mean? I didn't give a shit. There were plenty of fish in the sea.
You just said the party was winding down, Decker said.
Still enough girls to reel in a big one,
a smirk.
It didn't take long.
We'll need a name, McAdams said.
No problem. Babette Freuden.
Dana's mother was under the impression that you two were an item.
I don't know what Dana told her mom, but I'm not an item with anyone.
And that was the last time you saw her? McAdams said.
That I can remember, yes. He grew serious.
Has something bad happened and you're not telling me?
Everything is under investigation, Decker said. Did Dana have any worrisome habits?
She was up for whatever, you know.
No, I don't know. Tell me.
The usual.
Which is? McAdams asked.
Law exhaled.
She smoked a lot of weed, but that isn't exactly crisis calling, right? I've seen her do pills, coke, Molly.
How often?
Often enough, McAdams said.
Who'd she buy from?
Usually she brought her own stash.
She had her own stash?
Yep. And she usually brought enough for sharing. It made her very popular.
A pause.
Do you think she OD'd somewhere?
Is that what you think? Decker asked.
I don't know. You're the professionals,
McAdams said.
Where'd she get her goodies, Mitch?
I told you I don't know.
What if I were to tell you that I don't believe you?
I don't care if you believe me or not, the answer is still the same. I don't know where she got her shit.
If she wasn't missing, I wouldn't care, McAdams said. But she is. Any information would be helpful.
Law just shrugged. Decker said, Are we going at this the wrong way, Mitch?
The young man looked up.
What do you mean?
Was she the supplier who sold the shit?
Maybe, on occasion.
Well, that's not good for long-term survival, Decker said.
McAdams said,
You have to start naming names, Mitchell.
I don't know any names, he started squirming.
I know you don't want to rat anyone out, I respect that, but you are talking to the police. People are going to assume stuff, so you might as well be honest with us.
I don't know where Dana bought her shit.
He shook his head.
That's God's honest truth.
Another pause.
It probably wasn't local.
Why do you say that?
Last year, she was always disappearing over the weekend. When she came back, she had a pharmacy with her. It made her very popular, like I said.
It also makes you a target. Decker said.
Maybe, but it's not hard to find shit. If one source doesn't have it, there's always someone else.
You said Dana disappeared over the weekend. Any idea where?
Nope.
Do better than that, Mitchell, McAdams said. At least make a show of thinking about the question.
I don't know where she went. Like I said, we weren't an item.
And she did this every weekend?
Usually.
But she always was back on Monday with her bag of stuff.
So it wasn't unusual for her to go off for the weekend.
Nope.
McAdams looked at Decker, who said, Again, where do you think she went?
You can keep asking, you'll get the same answer. I don't know.
Take a guess.
McAdams took out the kid's phone, but held it firmly.
We need some help, Mitchell. Would I find it on your phone?
You know it's against the law to go through my phone without my permission. I could get you in big trouble.
You don't think I thought about that before I took your phone?
Luckily, the cell was still unlocked. McAdams began to scroll down his most recent calls.
I'm in Harvard Law. There are a lot of loopholes in search and seizure. Did you know that?
He kept scrolling.
Christ, you do get a lot of action.
Look, I'd help you if I could, but I don't know anything.
Where do you think Dana Berenson went over the weekend?
McAdams tossed him back his phone.
Think, kiddo. It's why your parents are paying $60K in tuition at this vaunted institution.
Law pocketed the phone.
This is just a guess, okay?
Got it.
If she didn't get her shit locally, she had to go elsewhere to buy. So I would assume that she went either north or south to get her stuff.
North or south, as in
the big cities, Boston or New York.
Since she was from Boston, I'm thinking that if I was you, I might want to look there first.
As they were walking back from the president's office, McAdams said,
What do you think?
Great interview.
Thanks. What do you think about Law?
I believe him.
Suppose, theoretically, I really did scroll down his phone.
As long as it's theoretical.
Suppose, theoretically, there were no phone calls or texts between Dana and him over the weekend.
That would support your conclusion. On the other hand, it could mean that he knew she was already dead. If that was the case, he'd delete everything between them.
I don't know, Harvard. She didn't swipe her card on Thursday night. Now, it could be that someone let her in. If that's the case, we should pick it up on CCTV. Or it could be she didn't go with Law because she had somewhere else to go.
Maybe her roommate can help us out with a time frame.
The roommate that she didn't like.
She could still tell us if she went to sleep in her bed.
Decker fingered the list given to him by President Velt.
We know people in the Boston and New York areas. I can certainly give them a call to find out if any bodies have been discovered. Beyond that, there isn't a lot we can do in the big cities.
Maybe we should talk to Dana's old high school friends. They may know more about her habits than Law does.
I agree with you. Start contacting them and see what you can find out.
Will do.
I suppose the elephant in the room is Bogat, McAdams said.
Do you think Dana is a fourth victim?
I don't know enough to answer that. What are you thinking? That digging up all those bodies reminded the killer that it was time to do it again?
The thought crossed my mind. Obviously, it crossed yours as well.
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Decker checked his watch. It was a little after 3.
I'm going to check out Dana's room and talk to some of the kids in the dorm. You want to come?
Of course.
McAdams rubbed his arms and looked across campus. The skies were deep blue as the sun burned off the clouds. The lawns were fading and the trees were starting to turn.
My favorite time of year. It gives me a certain transient energy. The days feel very fleeting, like you have to hurry up and finish whatever you've started. Autumn is this anteroom before you step into a cold, dark space.
You dread going back to school?
No, I just don't like winter.
He laughed.
Probably has something to do with being shot in the last 2 consecutive seasons.
Decker raised his eyebrows. Don't come back until the snow starts melting.
Oh, I'll be back. McAdams laughed again.
Third time's the charm, you know.
Decker smiled.
He hoped it wasn't tinged with anxiety.
Are you going to tell Dana's parents that their daughter is a dealer?
No need to stick it in their faces right now. But even if it comes to that, I'm thinking that the parents won't be shocked about the revelation. First, let's see how today goes.
Want me to call up the people we know in Boston and New York?
Please, do you have numbers?
I have Chris Mulrooney's number in Summer Village.
Go for it. Decker stuck his hands in his suit jacket.
You might want to wait until we're indoors. You'll hear the call better.
Sure.
He put the phone away.
It really is fortuitous that Rena discovered the grave when she did. In another month or two, the ground will be completely frozen over.
If it's the Bogat killer and he's found another place in the woods, we're toast if we don't find Dana before winter hits. When are you going back to school? A pause. I've asked you that question several times, haven't I?
I forgive your senility, old man. Or maybe you don't want to see me go?
That could be it, Harvard. McAdams smiled. School officially starts in a week. I'd like to be there by the weekend, unless you need me to search or something like that.
If it comes to a search, I'll need you, yes.
A beat. Is next weekend Rosh Hashanah?
No, Rosh Hashanah is the weekend after this one. If Dana is still missing by then, I can come down over the weekend.
You won't work, but I can.
We're probably getting ahead of ourselves. I'm still hoping she'll turn up, none the worse for wear.
Weird, McAdams said. I've never known you to be an optimist.
I'm closeted, Harvard. Deeply, deeply closeted.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Bone Box, a Decker Lazarus novel by Faye Kellerman, performed by Richard Ferrone.
Chapter 23. Not more than a few minutes into the search of Dana's belongings, her roommate showed up. She was around 5 feet and not more than 100 pounds, a pixie of a thing. Her face, as well as her last name, suggested Korean ancestry. She had long straight hair and dark eyes. She wore jeans, a green T-shirt, and a black hoodie.
"Excuse me?"
Her voice was angry outrage. McAdams looked up from the drawer he was rifling through and took out his badge. She examined it carefully.
"If you're looking for her stash, I can tell you where she usually hides it,"
Decker said. "Sure, show us where it is. She might have other things hidden there," McAdams said.
"And you are?" "Allison Park. I knew this would catch up with her eventually."
"What would catch up with her?" Decker said.
"You don't have to play coy cop, okay? Everybody and their brothers knew she was dealing."
Coy cop? Where was the respect? If not for the position, at least for the fact that he was an old guy.
"So we've heard."
Allison went to the closet, and using a chair as a step stool, she looked on the highest shelf.
"Here we go."
She brought down a knapsack and gave it to McAdams.
"I have some studying to do now, so if you wouldn't mind..."
Decker closed a desk drawer. "Your roommate has been reported missing." When the girl shrugged, he said, "You don't seem concerned."
"She'll show up."
"Does she go missing?"